Hour number two, Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game here on this Tuesday. We're live at Tennessee Brew Works. But now we say hello to our man, the head coach, Ed Ensworth, and also ESPN NFL analyst, Tim Hasselbeck, who is on the line with us. Timmy, what's up?
What's up? How you guys doing?
We're doing fantastic. And I'm going to let Big Joe tell you the news that I think is going to make you really happy.
Tim, my game of the week, NBA at Ensworth.
Oh, wait a second. Wait, you finally recognize that we play on Friday nights?
Fox 17. I need you on the field with me at 5:30. We do a pregame interview ahead of time. And then I would like to be escorted to the VIP room where I'll be fed till 6:30. Then I'll come out. I'll wave to the folks. And then when you win the game, sorry, Chris Sanders, we'll do an interview after the game. So it's all about Tim Hasselbeck on Friday.
This is – well, okay, it's not about me. I'm thankful that you're coming here. But it's, wait, so I get to do like a hit with an Emmy Award-winning host?
Three-time Emmy Award-winning host. And Tim, according to the national scene, the best TikTok account in town too. So.
Is that right?
That is, yeah.
Don't ask. Just say thanks.
So how many parking spots do we need reserved for you?
Probably four, because there's me, there's a camera guy, I have makeup, and then I have an assistant.
Hey, you know what? I don't have a game Friday night, so
can we back up a second? Makeup?
Yeah, because the shine on the bald head, look, they're there for you too, you understand this. So she can have two clients in one Friday night.
We just snuck that makeup comment right through there.
No, I'm excited to come out there. I'm looking forward to it.
Let's go, man. Well, we're excited to have you here. That's great. And listen, I know this might be hard for you, but, like, you're working. So please do not come in a Halloween costume.
Okay? Oh, my gosh. Well,
you shouldn't have said that.
If my Mrs. Roper costume arrives before them, that's what I'll be in.
Oh, that could be fun. Tim Hasselbeck joining us now. It was a tough one against Baylor, but you kind of expected they were going to put up a fight at their place, and you guys did as well.
Yeah. We got off to a pretty good start. I mean, we're up 14-0 in the game, and look, they're a really talented team. I think I talked to you. You know, really play these boarding schools. It's a little bit of a different element than it is. Playing the non-boarding schools for the most part. And so I thought our kids played hard. I actually thought we responded pretty well. And, you have to get a couple things that go your way to beat a team that's that talented. But hopefully we'll get another shot to see them. And, we'll have, maybe have a slightly different plan to how to handle it.
Well, going to be a fun one Friday night against NBA. As well. Let's unfortunately shift gears to the Titans as they traded Roger McCreary yesterday. And before we get into the compensation for the trade, I mean, this is kind of what happens when teams aren't good. The trade deadline is approaching. It's next week. And you have, good players that are going to get traded to contenders that need a little extra help. But, how tough is that in a locker room? And especially, I know, the defensive coordinator, Denard Wilson, had some comments today of, man, it would be really nice to have the three corners we started the year with. It's got to be tough for the coaches to, adjust with that as well.
Yeah, I mean, the coaches, they feel like dead man walking, right? That's just – there's no way around it. There was even, an example a few years ago where I think it was after Matt Rhule was fired in Carolina that – Steve Wilks had done a really good job, and the defense especially was playing extremely well. And there was even a little bit of hope with many of the coaches on the staff that, look, maybe there's a shot. Like, maybe there's a shot that Steve could get the job. Maybe that there's a shot that guys could stick around. And but ultimately, you have guys that are game planning that understand they've got to be looking for their next job. And then you're doing it with everything that you just laid out, Chase, and that, you also are trading players, starting caliber players, to teams that are having better seasons. So it's frustrating. It's hard to win that way, especially when the expectation is, to still win no matter what. Like, people want you to compete at the highest level of football when things, are happening that really make it difficult or near impossible for that to happen.
Now, I can sit here and, you know, play armchair GM, and they got a – basically they're doing a pick swap for McCreary, yep, a conditional pick or whatever. And I look at it as, okay, he was a second-round pick. Now, are you going to get that back? No, probably not. But I feel like they could have done better than swapping picks and a fifth-round pick. That's where I'm confused. I have no problem trading guys and getting draft assets, but I feel like the draft assets, you know, for some of these players need to be in the top 100.
Yeah, I think what happens is, you know, we can sit sometimes and look at what, like, the market may be, but really the market is, you know, what the rest of the league is saying the market is. So if, you know, I'm assuming that, you know, you talk to more than one team, you know, about a player, and then when you do, you know, what is the expectation, you know, in terms of what the compensation would be. Like, I feel like there have been trades where I'm like, really? You got a fifth rounder for him? And then, you know, the more you kind of look into it and you talk to, you know, various people, you're like, yeah, you know, I mean, they like, there was a reason that's what it was. And so, like, I don't think any GM is making a move without, you know, knowing that, like, what the market is maybe with somebody else for a certain player. So, like, I think in some ways for me, I've stopped being surprised on compensation, because some of it's like, all right, well, where is that guy in his contract, and when is he going to be up, and what would it cost to retain him? And so, you know, all of those things factoring in, rather than saying, all right, we use a second rounder on him, I mean, surely, you know, we could at least get a third rounder back for him. Like, you know, just it doesn't always match that way.
Tim, a lot of conversation would be about coming down the stretch about Cam Ward and leaving him in there and that offensive line and getting hit. Where are you on leaving him in there? Has his team's not any good. Offensive line's not that great. But, my God, I mean, he's learning by fire every Sunday. Is there a point where you're like, all right, enough's enough?
No. You play him. You play him and you play through it. And, you know, the guys that'll be in the locker room and on the team, you know, that are hopefully teammates of his, you know, in years to come and experiencing more success with him, you know, will have an appreciation for, you know, his, you know, perseverance, you know, like that's, and then I think there's also an element of, and I've said this probably to you guys countless times, it's so much easier to learn by doing it than by watching somebody else to do it. Like, there's a guy I know in town, I think he's won a few Emmys, who he hates the two words mental rep.
Like, there's, yes.
And so what I would say is, like, I like mental reps more than he does, but there's no question that it's easier to get better by doing something than watching someone else do it.
Yeah, that's the thing. I never learn by sitting on my bottom. I never learn. I look, and I get watching film is very important, but getting out there and doing is also important. Let me ask you this, Tim. If you had 30 minutes with Cam Ward, what's the main thing right now? Like, this afternoon, you had 30 minutes with him. You've been through that fire. What would you tell him to keep his spirits up?
I think the first thing would really be not about the football stuff. So, I've used Eli Manning as an example a few times, you know, probably on the show. Like, I think I've said to you, like, you never knew with Eli if he won the lottery or if his dog died. Like, that, right. he just was
right.
So steady. And so, you know, my time as a teammate with him, you know, he was on the backside of the papers, you know, being called a bust, and people were very critical of him. And then Tiki Barber retires and blasts him as a leader and, you know, all of those different things. And he just was so steady. Basically, you never knew. Like, you couldn't see him sweat. Like, you couldn't see that he was aware of what people were saying about him. Or he did such a good job of handling it and kind of being unfazed. It was almost like that, you know, almost like that Kobe Bryant, like, don't flinch kind of, you know, mentality, attitude. Like, he just had that. And so, you know, I think Cam has that in him. Like, you hear him talk about hard work and growing up and seeing his family and the way his family worked. And so coming and playing football, like, that's not hard work. And, like, I think there's an element of, like, don't lose that through all of this. Don't let, like, the frustration of lack of success or lack of team success, do not let that change that part of you. Because that part of you, persevering through this, is going to give you so much equity as a leader inside the organization when things turn around and start going better.
Talking with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. I guess the word's gotten out that the Titans are not open to trading, obviously, Cam Ward, nor should they, but also Jeffrey Simmons. And I push back on that simply because I think he's the one that could yield you the most. Why do you think they believe it's important to have him as a building block for what this looks like in the next year or two?
Yeah, because I think guys like him are hard to find from a standpoint of, like, really productive defensive linemen. Good, productive defensive linemen are hard to find. They're probably more difficult to find than offensive linemen. So, you know, I think that is one of the major reasons. You know, the fact that he's under contract with something that you probably feel is team-friendly, what he kind of has meant in terms of leadership on the team and in the locker room, things like that. And so sometimes you just look at a player and you're like, yeah, I believe that he's a cornerstone of what we're trying to build. And, you know, there was a time in Kansas City where, like, Chris Jones was really unhappy with his contract. And, you know, it was like, man, what are they going to do? They probably could have moved him. There was definitely interest. But, like, there was no way that the Kansas City was going to budge on Chris Jones. Like, they just were going to get it done because they truly believed that, like, he was a cornerstone, and that is a position and production at that specific position. That's just hard to find. So that would be my guess, but you're right. Like, and that it's also exactly why, you know, it would turn much more, you know, draft compensation, but, you know, is it really worth it? Because to replace it, probably is not realistic.
We'll have more with Tim Hasselbeck coming up next. We're live at Tennessee Brewworks today. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Tuesday at Tennessee Brewworks today. Continuing our conversation with Tim Hasselbeck from ESPN and also Innsworth. And Tim, I'm curious of your thoughts on this. You obviously know the college game very well and some of these coaches, and it's been a very busy season when it comes to coach firings. But with the carousel in full swing, sometimes it does affect the NFL. Are there any college coaches that stand out to you that could make the leap and actually be successful? And I asked this because of a report over the weekend about Steve Sarkisian potentially being interested in NFL jobs, including the Titans.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think sometimes it gets overblown about, like, hey, could a guy that's in college have success in the pros? And honestly, even vice versa. And, you know, it's easy sometimes to come up with the names of the people that have failed, right? But, like, there have been people that have had success doing it as well. And so, you know, ultimately, when you're a coach, you're in the people business from a standpoint of, you know, you need to hire good assistants. You need to identify good players. And then you need to get the most out of them. And so, look, there's a different blueprint for, you know, acquisition of players and, you know, things of that nature when you're talking about, you know, college and pros, even though they're starting to become more and more similar just with, you know, the transfer portal and money that can be paid to college athletes. So, I don't think there's any question that we're going to see NFL and college overlap in both directions. You know, I think it's one of the reasons I said to you guys last week, like, so if Clark Lee legitimately wouldn't be a candidate for an open NFL coaching job? Like, yeah, obviously we're like referring to the one here, but like why wouldn't he be? Like, if people thought Eli Drinkwitz was doing a good job, you know, in the SEC with maybe fewer resources than some other schools in the SEC, would that make him a candidate? If Bill O'Brien, who's been a head coach before, that's fine in the NFL, but if Bill O'Brien, you know, was having a ton of success at Boston College, which he is not, but, like, wouldn't that make him a candidate for some of these NFL coaching jobs? You know, much like Joe Brady is probably a candidate to to, you know, at least interview for the LSU opening.
Yeah, no, I think it's a really good point. So I'll be curious to see what kind of crossover there's going to be. Looking at some of the games, you know, from this past weekend, the Patriots and Mike Vrabel continue to impress. Do you think they can sustain this? And I mean, right now they're leading the division.
Yeah, they can. Look at their schedule. They've got a last place schedule, and so, like, compare their schedule to the Bills' schedule, and you look at it and you're like, man, that win in Buffalo, that was a pretty big deal, because, like you said it, they're right now sitting at the top of the division, and when you look at the teams that they play and the quarterbacks that they're going to face, I don't know why we should think that they're going to slow down. And, you know, I typically think, you know, people jump on like a new to the scene team a year too early. And I think you guys know, like, I think I'm the founder of the Drake May fan club.
Yep. Uh-huh.
They're really good, and their schedule is not hard at all, which I look at it and I'm thinking, look, they're going to need to, like, you know, really underperform a few games, and then Buffalo is going to have to overperform because of how difficult their schedule is.
It's a great point. Tim, you're probably the only guy on national radio that can answer this question. Why is it so difficult to play quarterback in the National Football League? And I ask that because I go down the rosters of all these teams. You know, like Carson Wentz is out for the season. He had to step in for J.J. McCarthy. And, you know, he's terrible. You know, in the if you compare him in the overall sense of a quarterback. But why is it so tough? Because, you know, you go back to the 70s and 80s, even the 90s, there were a lot of good quarterbacks. I don't think we have a lot of good quarterbacks anymore, or am I just completely off base?
I mean, I feel like there's a couple of things. I feel like this was really loaded, this entire question. Because, like, that I'm qualified to answer that. Like, I feel like it was like, you've had a quarterback rating of zero in a game before. You answer this question. Like, I felt like you could have just asked it like that a little bit, just to be
right.
More direct and interesting.
Well, I think he wanted to say, hey, your brother's Matthew Hasselbeck. He played in the Super Bowl. Maybe you can answer this.
Your brother was better than you at playing quarterback. Why could he do it and you couldn't? There was a lot of different ways you could have asked that question.
I'm sorry,
all of
buddy.
Them equally as insulting as the way you asked it. It's a really hard position. And I've said this before, it's a dependent position. And I think that you've got to – you know, also be in a system with players that can help you play well. And, you know, not every scenario fits and not everyone can do it. And so, like, I think there are all those things. And then, you know, you mentioned Carson Wentz. Then there are injuries. And then there are all those factors. I think it's hard. I do think I would push back, though, on the idea that, like, you know, in the 70s and 80s, you know, it was like, hey, we just were, you know, loaded with all of this talent at the quarterback position. And, like, you know, what a just, like, you know, the riches of what we get to watch every Sunday. Like, I think for the most part, you can find awesome quarterback play every weekend in nearly every game. Now, it can dwindle at times when there's injuries. But, like, you know, it's Matthew Stafford, it's Patrick Mahomes, it's Josh Allen, you know, it's Lamar Jackson when he's healthy. Like, they're really good quarterbacks. Like, I think C.J. Stroud can do a lot of really good things, has had his moments. Drake May has been extremely exciting to watch. Like, Dak Prescott is playing quarterback at a very, very high level. So, like, I don't think, like, you were turning on, you know, the Patriots in the 80s and being like, yep, Steve Grogan, this is – I'm never going to see things like this ever again.
But he won games. I mean, he got him to a Super Bowl.
No, he did. But, like, listen, Jared Goff, you know, won games and got teams to a Super Bowl, and they were like, yep, you got to go, man. You're not good enough.
Right.
You know? Like we, you know, they – I think our expectation of it has completely changed, where I just think we're so much more impatient, where it was like, with Grogan, it was like, all right, man, you know, get the Toradol shot in the neck and put the collar on, and we're okay with that, even though Dan Fouts is throwing for more yards than you.
I get it. Like, I'm Jim Hart for the Cardinals. I loved him. Brian Sipe for the Browns. But, look, I think you just made the point. I think the expectations now are such at a high level, an elite level, and if you don't get anywhere in that conversation, then you're meh as a quarterback.
Wait
so,
a second. Did
great
you just
point.
Mention Brian Sipe? Wasn't Sipe involved in, like, a gambling scandal?
That was Art Schleister.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Brian Sipe was MVP 1 year of the league. So
yeah, I mean, listen, and so was Rich Gannon, you know, and so like
right.
I do think that, and listen, so was Ron Jaworski, and so was like, so I think that, look, I think they were good players, and I think they were good players in their era, but I think if you're going to make a top 10 list of quarterbacks, it'd be like, hey, so that's, you know, roughly a third of the league or top 12, you know, and say like, you can find 12 really good quarterbacks. I really believe that you can. And, you know, and I think that it's a hard position and not everyone's going to play great every week. If you want to say, like, look, I don't believe in Kyler Murray, fine. Like, I can get on board with that. I don't believe in Bryce Young, sure, I can get on board with that. Like, but, like, go look at how Sam Darnold's playing. He's playing great football right now. Like,
uh-huh.
He's playing great football. So, you know, I think we have good quarterback play. I do. And I think if you really were to, like, compare it to all those other teams, you know, or eras, like, I don't know that everyone's going to be like, yep, that more than a third of the league had outstanding quarterback play.
I'm just curious. I mean, like, Bryce Young is an example. You brought him up. I think Bryce Young's game has gotten huge, gotten great, because he's learning,
yep.
went through the fire, and
yep.
when he's in there, he's turned it around. That patience, and you talk about a lot of teams don't have patience with quarterbacks. They have patience with him, and look what's happening.
Yeah, but I would say, like you just use that example, like Bryce Young. So, like, all right, so Bryce Young, does everybody feel, you know, differently about Bryce Young than, you know, the way people at one point, you know, felt about Gus Frerotte, you know? Or, like, I'm not positive that they do, you know? Or,
right.
Or Sam Bradford, you know, or... Like, I don't know that people feel like totally different, you know, in terms of like, yep, that guy for the next decade is going to be playing at an incredibly high level. Like, but I do think that there are some where you're like, look, Dak Prescott, man, like, he's been amazing when he's had an opportunity to play. And Matthew Stafford, like, wow,
yeah.
Like, look at what that guy has done. And Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen and, like, oh, my God, look at what Jared Goff has even done. Like, that's five guys right there, you know, that you're talking about. And that doesn't include, you know, Lamar Jackson or some of these other young quarterbacks.
Well, that's a good point. Imagine if Drew Bledsoe never got hurt.
Yeah. And so, like Bledsoe's a great example. Like, he was played at a very high level, right? And it still really wasn't good enough for people. And then so much so that it was like, all right, after New England, it was Dallas and Buffalo and, you know, just, you know, trying to hold off guys like Romo and J.P. Lossman. And, you know, I think it's – I think it's always been kind of the same. I think our expectations of how we expect guys to play week in and week out, I think has drastically changed.
Good point.
So, Tim, putting record aside – if I say that Green Bay is the best team in the NFC and Indianapolis is the best team in the AFC, is that a true statement?
I don't know that I believe that Green Bay is the best team. I think there's a little bit of recency bias
sure.
seeing them play against a terrible defense. Like that's, you know, I think that's, you know, that's part of that's part of, I think, what we've seen, you know. And then I think that in terms of the Colts, look, I think the Colts are really good. I think they're for real. But I also think Kansas City's really, really good.
Yeah.
So, like, I think you can be an outstanding team in the AFC and still not be the best.
So, in the NFC, who would you take then?
I mean, look, I think Philadelphia is as good as any team in the NFL or in the NFC. Look, I think Detroit is,
yep.
you know, like Detroit has, there's a lot to like about Detroit, a lot. And you know, the one thing I would say about Green Bay, and I think Green Bay is really good and in the mix and all of that stuff, you know, but when people can kind of line up and run it at Green Bay, I think that's a little bit of their weakness. Now, when you've got to throw the ball against Green Bay, I think you're playing right into their hands. But teams that can get creative and run the football against the Packers, you know, I think can make that defense look different than it did when they, you know, were getting Pittsburgh into all of these third and longs the other night.
Hey, real quick, Tim. You know, Carly Ursay is standing behind Steichen on the sidelines. Would it be okay if your wife stood behind you on the sidelines during a game?
Yeah, listen, she's front center in the stands, and like if she doesn't like a call, I'm sure that I would hear it. That's why I got the headset on. So sometimes it's not even connected to anybody. It's just so it looks like I can't hear what anybody is saying. I mean, Joe, you're going to be here. You're going to be here. So if there's a call or something that you don't like, or there's, you know, some type of operation that you're unhappy with, I mean, like, just feel free to just holler down the sideline to me.
You just open it. Do me a favor. Will you do one play? And this frustrates me, and I call the college football games.
Yep.
I would like to see 10 men rush the punter. I am tired of punt returns. I would like to see an all-out blitz on the punter. Okay. Punters have gotten so good, there's a fair catch all the time. But I want to see the punter panic.
Well, listen, we can do that. We can. What else do you like? We had a couple surprise onside last week. We'll add to that. We'll throw in a few more, you know, onside kicks this week.
Yep.
Maybe a fake punt for you. So you like an all-out blitz on punt? Like really get after it. All right, we can do that.
Do you have a good kicker?
Here's one thing that all of our players are good, Joe. Okay. All of them are good. That was a silly question. Okay.
Right.
Here's what I would say. I promise you one thing that we won't do. Okay. If there's a fourth and one, we will not line up in shotgun. Promise you that right now.
I will run down the field screaming if that happens.
So listen, you can run onto the field, okay? Just no streaking, okay? You can scream. You can run onto the field, but if we are in shotgun on fourth and one. It doesn't mean we're going to run the ball.
Right.
But we will not be in shotgun.
Can you promise me this? Ben Jones is on the staff, right?
Yes, correct.
Can you promise me this? If Joe runs onto the field, can Ben just tackle him as hard as he can?
I would love to see that. That's, we will set that up. If Joe goes on the field, we're going to send it's going to be like look like an Oklahoma drill back to Joe's playing game with Ben and in Leroy Harris.
Oh, okay? I love it.
Perfect.
Have it like the Liberty Mutual commercial where that dude runs on the field for his emu and that dude just lays him out.
It could be a combination of that and those like mayhem commercials.
Yes, all that. All right, one more play. I don't like onside kicks. I do like this, though.
We recovered two surprise onside kicks last week. What do you mean you don't like onside kicks?
Doesn't mean I like it, but here's the deal. I'm guessing because it's a private school, your kicker's pretty good, right? Because all private school kickers are good. I would like, instead of an onside kick, Tim, for your kicker to drill the first guy on the open line right in the face.
We tried that last week. Ricocheted off the kid. We just weren't able to recover it.
Love it.
The other one.
We've already got
that one. That one's probably already in the scouting report. So, like, what other ones do you like? You like a fumble rooski?
Well, hold on. Hold on.
Okay.
Chris Sanders listens to this show. He's at NBA. We can't give him your game plan.
That's true. We can't. Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, like, I'm sure he's expecting it. I mean, like, we're not afraid. We're not afraid to call out the tricks here. We're like, you know what I mean? Like, we're having fun. Like, we had three of them last week alone, just on kickoff.
Were you behind? So, is that why you did it?
No.
Okay.
We won the toss, went down and scored, and onside kicked.
Oh, this is going to be fun Friday night.
You know, this is going to be good. Well, I think I'm going to have to show up now.
Let's go.
All right. By the way, I like pizza for a pregame meal, so I'd like for that in the Innsworth VIP room Friday night.
Okay. We'll put that in. We'll put that in the media credentialed area.
Or Crystal. I don't care, Tim. Either one.
Tim, appreciate it as always, and good luck Friday night.
All right. Thanks, fellas. See ya.
Absolutely. Tim Hasselbeck joining us here on the program, and yes, Big Joe, I may have to
come out there.
I may have to join because I don't have a game.
Look,
it's Thursday night.
Right. Chris Sanders, Derek Mason, Tim Hasselbeck. I mean, I love getting inside their heads, talking about plays, football, moments, practice, things, anticipation. I mean, those guys, it's so grateful we have those three guys on the station with us to talk about just beyond X's and O's, and those three guys are wonderful.
Tomorrow night you'll be on the call alongside the best, Chip Walters, as the Blue Raiders will take on Jacksonville State, 6:30, all the action on 93.3. With coverage also available on the Totally Hits Nashville app and TotallyHitsNashville.com. We're live at Tennessee Brew Works today. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Tuesday. We're live at Tennessee Brew Works today. Appreciate Tim Hasselbeck for joining us here on the program. Our buddy Music City Bets, Ricky, just sent us this tweet. Paul Andrew Edson Jr. Says, Zach Glatt revealed a wild story from the Jets locker room after the Bengals win. He and Tom Rock are waiting in the locker room to speak with cornerback Jarvis Brownlee Jr., who made the game-sealing play on 4th-and-9 against the Bengals. At one point, Brownlee asked Zach and Tom what time it is. We say it's like 4:57. He goes, oh, great. I still have time to go watch the Titans lose. This is the kind of pettiness that I strive for.
Oh, absolutely.
I love that. And then today, the coordinators talked, you know, for the Titans. And, you know, obviously, L'Jarius Sneed's hurt, which, okay, honk if you've heard that before. But they traded Brownlee. They just traded McCreary. And let me find, I want to find the exact quote real quick that Denard Wilson, the defensive coordinator, said for the Titans. This is I think Kaharski has a video, but others have had it as well. He's talking about Jalen Armour Davis. He's one of the guys we have, and we have to keep riding that horse. And then he goes on, he basically says, you know, we can have the next man up mentality, but it would be nice if we had the three starting corners we had to start the year.
Ouch.
Which I think was a little bit of a veiled shot at, you know, management. Obviously can't help a guy being hurt, but, you know, I think that's interesting.
This makes me laugh, too. This is from Nick Holtz today from Teron Davenport.
Oh, was he giving
suggestions? Yeah. Said they're working to not be as predictable on the first down by when they run the football, which often leads to falling behind the chains. Holtz pointed out how they have minimized the penalties, which has helped eliminate some of the third and longs. No, your third and longs, because you are extremely predictable on your first down, and your second down is extremely predictable. Has one tweeter back that then says, any high school coach in America would give the same assessment, so it's basic that it's disrespectful to the listener. At this point, you're not going to listen to anything they say over at St. Thomas Sports Park with anything at all. Because you're 1-7, your teams are woefully unprepared, you're getting driven off the ball, you can't block anybody. I mean, it's just, it is a cavalcade of errors that is happening over there. At the end of the day, I just think, and you brought up yesterday, they're just not good.
No, they're not. At the end of the day, they're not good.
They're not good.
They're not a good football team. They're not going to be a good football team for the foreseeable future until they get out of their own way and, you know, actually start making moves, like not giving up a starting cornerback for a pick swap.
Awful. What's the spread this weekend? I'm curious.
Last I saw was 8.5.
Because I don't think, Chase, you take the Saints game out, I don't think there's a game where they
cover another one
under 7 as an underdog. Take the Saints game out. I think they'll
ten and a half.
The Chargers coming in here. They still got to play the Chiefs. They got to play the Texans again. They got to play Jacksonville twice. I don't think they're going to be under 7.5 as a underdog. The rest of the year, I think it'll be more than that.
Here's what I would say. I don't think
– terrible.
I don't think there's another win on this schedule. There probably is because it's the NFL. Like
the Saints. That's it.
Browns maybe.
But it's up there. Yeah. So I don't know. I think
couldn't you see just a terrible, terrible team like this and they mess around and beat like the Jags or they beat the Seahawks or something?
They always
shouldn't.
Do.
They always do.
They should.
Even in the 2014 season, they started out by beating the Chiefs
on
the road. 2015, they ended up beating the – and the Bucs weren't that great, but it was like, oh, they got some things going on here. And then now it's just hit a bottom of we've never seen before in the city. 2014 was pretty bad. 15 was a little exciting because you had Mariota and you felt good about a few things. But now it's like, what do you feel good about? Even Cam is not really like, oh, yeah, Cam Moore, because he's got so much work to do.
You know what's, like, super depressing? We have 9 more games of this BS.
Love it. I absolutely love it.
9 more games. They have 9 more games.
What could happen? I mean, and that's why we, you know, sometimes we're defaulting over to Vanderbilt now because we're seeing things with Vanderbilt we did not plan on in July about this team being 7-1, ranked in the top 10, going to Texas with an inside track to get to the college football playoffs. I mean, would that be remarkable? Indiana, Vanderbilt, and the college football play. Indiana was there last year, though, but getting back in there. It's got to happen someday.
615-737-1025. We'll come back and wrap up hour number 2 next, live at Tennessee Brew Works on 102.5 The Game.
I need to learn more about this. I need to be able to say, is this person full of BS? Do they even know what they're talking about? And I think one of the things that being on the headset has really helped me learn is – to the question earlier, it's such a complex organism, a football team and how it operates. And on game day, and you could say, oh, that person ran that route wrong. When you learn to find, oh, someone tagged the wrong wide receiver, and it wasn't really the player's fault. It was the person that called it. So, and it's never, I think that's been a very valuable, because it also helps us be able to know, where do we need to make tweaks? What resources do we need? What do we need to fix? So much of it comes down to just how we operate and how things work. And the headsets are really, I would suggest it for anyone else that has to pay coaches and GMs millions and millions of dollars. It helps you make a less expensive mistake potentially.
That was Carly Ursay-Gordon talking about why she wears the headset and takes notes on the sideline. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game, live at Tennessee Brew Works today. I mean, it's funny. We laugh. If I owned a team, I probably would do the same thing. Now, I would put football people in charge of the football team, and I wouldn't meddle. Now, I'd want to know what's going on, but I would sit there in a boardroom, and I go, yeah, you know more about this than I do. I'm going to trust
you. So, why don't
you
tell Jerry Jones that?
Well, Jerry Jones thinks he knows more than anybody else.
Do you remember when, and I'm with you, when Vince Young would have the earpiece in on the sidelines and people were saying, oh, he's listening to music? That was such a lie that, like, somebody at the Titans told me he's listening to music during the game. He's not listening to the play. And that became such a lie. And I felt bad for Vince because he had to defend that. Like, I'm listening to play calling. And going in. And that's the same thing. I mean, I'm going to listen to those play calls as well. And it's her team. Why not? That's why our joke yesterday was, if Amy Adams, Strunk, was on the sidelines, what would she be writing in her notebook? I mean, Carly Ursay is, look, the fact that people say women don't know football is so astronomically wrong.
Yeah.
That sometimes it drives me crazy. And she's very smart. She's very capable. We know when a play's not working. Everybody knows when a play's not working. So I got no problem. And around the league, I don't think nobody has a problem with it.
Right.
If you got a problem with it, then that's on you, man.
But I think we can agree, like, whether it's man, woman, like, you don't want them having a headset going, Mike, could you on that next play run a zig route, you know, or put Pollard out in the flat? And like that's not what we're looking for.
Could you see her walk over and tap on the shoulder like, well, I'm sorry, I didn't catch that play call. What was it? They're in the middle of a game. Did she go? Oh, yeah, okay. I saw some people had pitched. She did go to the Indianapolis game because some people had pictures of her on the sidelines.
I think she's been at every game.
Okay.
I mean, I think so. Eric wants to weigh in on the Titans and Vandy. Eric, what's up?
Hey, guys, as far as the Titans, this is another game where I would be surprised if Cleveland's more even by more than a touchdown. I don't see that, guys. And I'll also say this, I think the Titans will at least get one more win, but a lot of times, guys, when you have a team as bad as this, it's just tough for teams to get up for you every single week. So there's a game like the come here like at home. I'm not saying this the Chargers this week because Chargers will have 10 days off, but we'll be coming off a bye. Maybe it would be Houston or Seattle or Jacksonville. I don't know about Kansas City, unless Kansas City could be looking ahead because you remember, guys, Kansas City, after they play us here, they've got a Thursday night game a few days later. So it just depends. And also about Vanderbilt, this is not to knock Vanderbilt, guys. I think Vanderbilt has to really be careful here, guys. And the reason why I say this is Vanderbilt is coming off several, like, physical, emotional games in a row. Guys, I think they could be in for a flat spot either this week against Texas or next week against Auburn. And the reason I say that, you remember Alabama. Alabama played four straight games against ranked team. They played South Carolina, had to come from behind to beat them, and South Carolina's not very good. And that's one of the things when Vanderbilt is such good as they are in physicality, they could fall into the same trap where I'm not saying they're necessarily looking past an opponent, but with the SEC and the way it is, guys, do not be surprised either this Saturday or next Saturday against Auburn. Vanderbilt kind of has that flat spot because I believe it's coming. They still have four games left. It's just tough. Yeah. With the physicals of SEC for them to play like that every week.
Guys, hold on, don't you go anywhere. Don't you go anywhere. Don't you put that out in the universe, Eric. Don't you put that out there, buddy.
I mean, it happened to Alabama. I'm thinking it could happen. I'm just not saying this to be mean, but I just think that happens to all good teams.
I know. Look, and I get it. This Texas game is going to be very difficult for him, but that's the SEC. Every week you have to bring it every single week, and Vandy's learning this. They've learned it the hard way. Now they get to learn it each and every week. So, good point, Eric.
Thank you, Eric. Y'all take care. We'll talk to you soon.
You bet, buddy.
I will say this, because I'm the same way. Like, don't put the bad juju out there. But isn't it a little bit refreshing to be talking about worrying about Vanderbilt going into a trap game and actually being in a position to be able to do that?
Right?
Like, that's what's kind of refreshing. We'll have more on that and much more. Coming up next in hour number three, Chase and Big Joe live at Tennessee Brew Works today, 102.5 The Game.